They were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. Welcome to Primary Technology, the show about the tech news that matters. Today, we have a massive show. We're going to talk about the ethics of technology reviews and the backlash to MKBHD's Humane AI Pen. I ordered yet another AI gadget. We'll see if it comes before the pen. iPhone has a game emulator in the App Store right now. Boston Dynamics is literally creating Terminator. More physical media has died. And Jason has a special surprise for us. He got an Apple Vision Pro. So we're going to talk about that in the personal tech segment. This episode is brought to you by all of you who support the show directly, and for that, we thank you. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles. Joining me, as always, my friend Jason Aiton. How's it going, Jason?
It's good. I've learned a lot this week, Stephen, and I can't wait to talk about all of it.
You've learned a lot about yourself. You've learned a lesson about love and about Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah.
You've learned it all. You've learned it all.
At the same time, yep.
That's it. We have so much to cover. I'm excited to talk about tech reviews because I have so many thoughts. A couple five-star review shout-outs. Web1032 gave us a five-star review shout-out. Battery percentage on. Sorry, nobody's perfect.
Thank you so much.
There you go. So keep those coming. We want to give five-star review shout-outs at the top of the show for those of you who leave them. And I want to ask you this. Share the show far and wide. There's still people that are discovering the show who follow Jason and I on like social media and stuff, but they actually still hadn't heard about Primary Technology. So we would appreciate if you share the show. I wanted to like come up with some kind of like social media ambassador prize or contest. I don't have any of that formulated. We should probably talk about it. But one of the things I would love to do is get t-shirts. I'm wearing a basic Apple Guy t-shirt right now. The Commander one, if you're watching on YouTube. YouTube.com/@Primary Tech Show. But I would love to get some Primary Tech t-shirts, maybe especially before like Dub Dub season. But I don't know. I mean, Jason's a photographer. I can make t-shirts. But I don't know if either of us are necessarily merch experts. Would you consider yourself a merch expert?
No.
Okay.
I had to even think about what would that mean. Yeah. Merch expert. No, it sounds very contrabandish. But,
yeah, I'm not sure. But we want t-shirts. And so we're going to think about, I'm asking all of you, the audience out there listening, watching, if you make designs and t-shirts, you know, we don't want you to do work for free. We could maybe figure something out, but reach out to us because we'd love to have some cool t-shirts for Primary Technology.
Yeah.
And one other question, we mentioned this review last week who got the movie quote at the beginning of the show, which that's what we do at the beginning of every show. I say a random movie quote that's applicable to the subject matter of the episode. So it's not just totally random. He did the Godzilla vs. Muto, but he was asking about, is there a shortcut to create a reminder when the daily reading goal has not been met in Apple Books? So this is another way to get your question answered on the show is leave that five-star review. And I know there's a ton of you who've already left five-star reviews and you're going to update your review. But if you ask a question there, we'll do it. Don't see actually the reading goals for books. I'm looking right now in my Shortcuts app and there is not like get reading goal or get status of reading goal. So I don't know if there's a way to do it offhand, but I'll do some more research and get back to you in the future as well. So we need to talk about tech reviews. One quick thing before that. I'm in the Washington Post, Jason.
That's very exciting. Hey, before we let you toot your horn, I want to let you do that. Okay, but I did want to say, so Steven said you can leave us questions in the reviews, which is absolutely true. I will just say there is a like slightly better chance that we might answer them if you like send them to us on social media or email us at, I don't know, what is it, podcast@primarytech.fm?
That's right. podcast@primarytech.fm or theotherguy@primarytech.fm.
I did get an email to that email address one time.
Yeah.
I feel really bad because now I don't remember what it was about. But it was like a follow-up to something I had said. I'm going to look it up. But anyway, all I'm trying to say is sometimes if especially if you're updating your review and you add something and it's at the bottom and we may not see that there is a question in there, we will look. I try to keep Steven honest by checking all of these things that he puts in here. But if you email us or send it to us on social media, you have my word that we will give it our best effort to try to answer those questions if we can.
Yes, absolutely. So you can email us. That email is in the show notes as well. You could just get it there. Yeah, just real quick, I just want to say the Washington Post, a reporter reached out to me. His name is Chris Velasco. He used to write for Engadget back in the day. And then before that, he wrote for TechCrunch. And we tangentially had heard of each other around then, but he's writing for the Washington Post now. And he reached out to me via email and did a little interview with me on the phone yesterday about shortcuts. And so I'm in the Washington Post. It's not like an expose. It's not about me. It's about shortcuts. But there's one of my TikTok videos is in there where I talk about shortcuts and he mentions me multiple times and links to some of my YouTube videos. So that's fun. Although I want to thank you, Jason, personally, because I think you were probably the first legit publication to quote me in an article, and that was actually what helped me get verified with Twitter when it was actually a verification process and not just something you pay for.
Not just $8 a month or whatever.
$8 a month. That was actually how I got verified, because I was able to link to the several articles that you had quoted me in. I think one was about smart home. The other one might have been about shortcuts. I don't remember. But yeah, I appreciate it. So thank you.
I feel good that I was able to save you the $8 a month at that time anyway.
at that time.
I provided you with that service. You're welcome.
and it does say that now Twitter brought it back where it says verified since the year. So you can actually see when somebody's verified. But anyway, right. Let's talk about tech reviews.
All right.
MKBHD, after we published last week's show, shared his review of the Humane AI Pen, which the title of his video is "The Worst Product I've Ever Reviewed." For now, like all the other reviewers, I think that's an important detail, like David Pierce at The Verge, who was also very negative about the pen, and many other reviewers. I watched several reviewers. Joanna Stern had a review at the Wall Street Journal. Everybody was negative about the AI pen. It is not like MKBHD has not been the only negative review about this product, but because of the title, maybe people went up in arms about this. And typically, MKBHD has either like mid-range or positive reviews about products. You know, I watch pretty much all his videos. And when he talks about a product, oftentimes they're good or great. And this is something behind the scenes, because Jason and I are also both tech reviewers in different ways. Jason reviews products for Inc. I'll do reviews on my YouTube channel at times. And I want to talk about a review I did many years ago for the original Apple Watch. But part of the thing about being a reviewer is choosing the products you review. And I know for me, oftentimes I choose not to review products I know will be bad. I will get emails from companies that want to send me something, and whether I pretty much have a good feeling it's going to be bad, or the company was in the news for like privacy and security issues, I will choose not to review those products. And just like a journalist at a publication, the stories they choose to write, while as being as unbiased as possible, is in itself part of journalism, is choosing what to cover. So number one, the Humane AI Pen needed to be covered. The company has started, it's a new startup. This is their first product. Two ex-Apple employees, tons of publicity. Obviously, the Humane AI Pen is everywhere, at least in the tech sphere, and people are interested about it. So it's necessary to cover. I think that's number one, important to remember. And then number two, as you review a product, the backlash, I'll specify first, because this was kind of the tweet that really brought everything to a head. This was a tweet by Daniel Vassallo, and it has like 22 million views right now. He said about Marquez's review of the Humane AI Pen, "I find it distasteful, almost unethical, to say this, namely that it's the worst product I've ever reviewed, when you have 18 million subscribers. Hard to explain why, but with great reach comes great responsibility. Potentially killing someone else's nascent project reeks of carelessness. First, do no harm," which I think is like a medical oath. Isn't that for doctors?
Right, the Hippocratic Oath, I think.
Yeah, it's part of the Hippocratic Oath, not the oath of tech reviewers, which there is no oath. So this tweet made the rounds everywhere and brought much conversation on both sides, whether Marquez is right to do this, whether this was responsible or whatever. And I want us to get to our thoughts in a moment, but to close the story, MKBHD then published a follow-up video, which he doesn't often do directly about commentary about his own reviews, but this video was, "Do bad reviews kill companies?" Has almost 3 million views right now as we record. And he talked about his stance on basically reviewing products as a whole. I want to say, MKBHD, if you look at the definition of cool in the dictionary, I'm pretty sure his picture is underneath for two reasons. One, he is very obviously transparent. Like when he's talking about technology, it's clear that he's speaking from his opinion, but his very informed opinion, extremely informed, because he has done tech reviews for a long, long time and he has reviewed many tech products. So he is speaking from experience, but he's speaking honestly. Like, I never get the feeling that he is putting on for a company because they sent him a free product. MKBHD needs no free products. And we'll talk about that aspect of tech reviews maybe in a moment. But also cool in the sense of he was able to explain this without feeling defensive, which is very difficult. You know, I did not get the feeling that MKBHD was being defensive about this. I truly think he was trying to explain like what it means to be a tech reviewer. And that was his point and reply to this original tweet that was kind of lambasting him, he basically said, "We disagree as to what my job is," which I think is the crux of it. And I have some thoughts because I've had experiences reviewing products, but I find this just a fascinating commentary. And so I'll get to my thoughts in a second. But what were your thoughts as you saw this unfold over the last week?
Yeah, I think, well, two things off the bat. First, there was really only one that I could find person who took issue with the review, right? There were a couple of other people who maybe added onto the replies it really sort of magnified this weird perception that people have of this, because like the most searing indictment you can make of him is that he wasn't as hard on the Cybertruck. But the only reason that made people mad is they just don't like the Cybertruck, and they don't like Tesla, and they don't like Elon Musk. And so it's like, why didn't you say bad things about this thing? So you obviously have no credibility, which is just not true.
I just want to interject there. I did see a good number of other people, both on Threads and Twitter, calling MKBHD out for being unfair with specific examples, such as the Pixel 6a, MKBHD said it had a 60 hertz refresh rate and it felt slow. But when he reviewed the iPhone 13, 14, 15, which has a 60 hertz refresh rate, he doesn't mention it's slow. To which I would say, I actually have a Pixel 6a and my wife has a 15 with a 60 hertz display. And the 6A feels slow compared to the 15.
Yeah. Also, the 6A has a processor that's the equivalent of the original Macintosh to like a Power Mac. Like it's...
yeah.
So right? Compared to the iPhone 15? Come on.
I mean, it does have a Tensor chip supposedly, but it feels slow. Like the bottom line is MKBHD, when he reviews a product, it is for the viewer, which we'll talk about, like who are tech reviews for. It's for the viewer. And if a viewer's real life experience would be that swiping on a Pixel 6A is going to feel slower than swiping on an iPhone 13, then that should be what he said, even if the technical spec matches. So anyway.
Right. Well, and also like, yes, every person who reviews products has some kind of a bias. That's irrelevant to this particular part of the conversation, because the point was it's irresponsible to say mean things about companies that you might like when you have 18 million subscribers. And really, that is the reason that this is the one I think that rose above sort of like into the mainstream, because he has 18 million subscribers. So Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, is the Taylor Swift of the tech reviewing industry. And what I mean by that is he's sort of singular in that he, correct, like he is on a different like platform than even the Joanna Sterns, the Grubers, whoever. Like I have told this story before, that I was at WWDC last year. And as I was, you know, you walk into the circle, right? The spaceship.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
let's say you come in at like 12 o'clock and Cafe Max is at like basically like, I don't know, 3-ish o'clock. And so you have to like walk around. And as I'm walking, there's just a mob of people. They're all taking photos and selfies. And I'm thinking for sure Tim Cook's standing there, right? Or Craig Federighi or someone. And no, it's MKBHD. He's the most famous person at WWDC, even though Bob Iger was there, right? Well, he wasn't there, but he was on stage. Wait, right. He wasn't actually on stage. He was in the video that they showed us. So he is on a different level and he does have 18 million subscribers. But what I mean when I say that he's the Taylor Swift of this industry is that he's also incredibly savvy, right?
Yes.
He knows, he picks the products that he knows are going to be interesting to his audience and he gives them an honest review. He doesn't have to review everything. He has no obligation to do that. Just like Taylor Swift doesn't have an obligation to play a concert in X city or Y city. Like she knows her audience and she does it. And the fact that he put that second video up just shows how savvy he is, because he was able to sort of understand what was happening and he didn't have to be defensive. He didn't because the level of criticism was actually pretty small. It just got amplified by a bunch of people saying, "What are you even talking about? This is such a terrible take." And it took on its own life of it, you know, a life of its own. I just give him a lot of credit. There was a Walt Mossberg reply on Threads that I linked to in an article I wrote, which is like, Walt Mossberg has said, "I've always admired his reviews and now I admire him even more." And my point was like, well, that's about, he doesn't get any better than that as far as like an affirmation or a compliment. Right. And so I just think that it took on a really weird life of its own. And I think it's simply because he does have this huge platform. And I think that the point that the original person was trying to say is like, you shouldn't punch down. Okay. And I think that's fair, right? It would be completely inappropriate for Marques to make a video trashing one of your videos or one of my articles. That would be not fair, right? Neither of us have the ability to sort of adequately defend ourselves to that kind of thing.
Right.
But Humane has spent years hyping this up as the biggest product that is going to be released. They did a TED Talk. They did a, you know, all these different types of things. They have been, it has been the most mysterious company for like the last 5 or 6 years. And they were positioning this as the device that will break you free from the terribleness of your smartphone. I don't know anybody who hates their smartphone, so I'm not really sure. So it absolutely deserved to be reviewed by him. Right. And his review is exactly the same as everyone else. Last thing I'll say, sorry, is that if you read through the replies to Vassallo's original tweet, it's a bunch of people saying, dude, this is a terrible take. And he keeps going back to the thing saying, this title isn't honest, it's just sensational. Well, first of all, obviously Marquez has to create titles that reflect what they're going to, what the video is about, but that will be interesting to its audience.
Right.
He flat out says in the review, this is like the worst product I've ever reviewed.
Right.
And he just made that the title. So it is honest. It is not sensational. So if Marquez really believes that this is the worst product he's ever reviewed, how can someone come in and be like, this is not an honest title? It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and also for YouTubers like myself, and maybe in like the hundreds of thousands of subscribers instead of millions, there is an element of how do I package my video so people will click it? And sometimes making a slightly sensational title or thumbnail is the answer to that. But when it comes to MKBHD specifically, he requires no clickbait for people to watch his videos. You know, when the Apple Vision Pro launched, his were the only videos getting millions and millions of views every time. Like he published multiple Apple Vision Pro videos. One was strictly an unboxing video, and like the title was Unboxing Apple Vision Pro. He does not need to be sensational to get the views. So if he puts it in the title, there is a different timbre because of his size and popularity, because he does not need to be sensational to get the views. So if he puts it in the title, it's obviously something he feels strongly about. Now, there was a quote in his follow-up video addressing the backlash where he says, quote, I don't have any duty to any of the companies whose products I cover, it is only the people watching the videos. I think that's very important. When you review a product, technology or whatever, you are reviewing it, if you're a creator, for your audience. The people that are going to be watching your video, they may be making a buying decision. Maybe they are gaining knowledge to then recommend or not recommend products to their friends and family who might think about buying it. And so the video is not for the company, which I understand is a tension, because there are some YouTubers, and this is a practice on YouTube, where a company will pay for a review and that gets really sticky. And I've been in this situation. I have never accepted money for a review. If a company wants to send me a product for me to review, whether it's HomeKit or technology related, they send me the product and they might say like, this is going to be a paid review or whatever. I say no, like I don't want to accept money for reviews. This way I can say forever into the future, I have never been paid for a review, because I think that's an important distinction. Now, there are other times, if you watch my social media, I posted a video about actually this microphone that I'm using right now, the Earthworks Ethos. I posted a short video on Instagram and YouTube Shorts. That was a paid ad. Like that Earthworks Ethos paid me to make that short video. And in that sense, it was not necessarily a review. I wasn't doing like a long form video of it. I've used this mic already for many years. I've already promoted it just because I love it so much. And so for that, it was a good match to say like, okay, if you want me to actually make a dedicated video talking about this microphone for 60 seconds, I can do that. But that is very different than saying I'm going to publish a 10-minute video and you pay me $1,000 to review this product, because then as a reviewer, you're semi on the hook to say like, if I ever want this company to work with me in the future, if I say that this is a really bad product, am I shooting myself in the foot? And so I do think creators have to be very careful, especially in this paid review category, which again, I'll reiterate, any review that I've done on a product, I've never received money for. You do get the product, and you know, people do on social media, they're like, well, you got this product for free, and so you're not going to be honest or whatever. I have to say, after doing this for like a year or two, even as short as I've been doing it, free products is not that attractive anymore. Like I say no to way more products because I just don't need them. I have too much stuff already. Like that's no longer like a motivation to really do it. And so a lot of times I'll just buy something. Like I've reviewed some Anker chargers recently. I bought all those. The ESR car charger, I just bought it. And so I'm just buying those things and then I can review it and really feel like I have no skin in the game, which I bought my AI pin, which I still haven't got. And so I bought a Rabbit R1, but we'll get to that. And one other thing I'll just mention briefly, the very first big review I did for a tech product was for Apple Insider. It was in 2015, and they actually allowed me to review the original Apple Watch in April 2015. I got the original Apple Watch on day one on launch day. I used it for several days. I forget, maybe it was about a week. And I reviewed it long form here on the website, did all these pictures and all that. It was my first one. Very grateful for Apple Insider allowing me that opportunity and experiencing that. And in Apple Insider reviews, they give it a star rating. I gave it 3.5 out of 5 stars. Now, if you'll remember, the original Apple Watch was not great.
It was bad, is what you meant to say.
It was now, there were some things that were good about it, like getting text messages and notifications, being able to respond, really cool. Some of the widgets, only first-party widgets, some of those were decent. And it was a new product category, and the fitness and everything, it was exciting. And so I gave it 3.5 out of 5 because it was not good in many areas. And I say that in this review, but it was still like exciting and the hardware was beautiful. Like I thought 3.5 out of 5 was fair and I don't regret it even to this day. The comments on this review at the bottom were so polarized. Half of them were, you're an idiot. This deserves 5 stars because this is a groundbreaking new product. The first in this product category. And the other half were like, you're an idiot. This deserves 1 star because it's a piece of garbage. Doesn't run third-party apps well. And in that moment, like, you know, you have the initial wave of like, oh, I did something wrong. And then I had the realization, when you do a review like this, MKBHD is no exception, you're not doing it for those vocal commenters. The most vocal commenters, the most vocal repliers on social media, their opinions are not the masses. And honestly, many times the review is for those either very quiet commenters or silent watchers.
Right.
Because they're the ones just doing research, just trying to learn about a product. And so in that moment, I realized, okay, you really need to not, it's hard, not consider what people will think about your review, but honestly use a product for a decent amount of time and provide feedback as you experience it. That's all you can do. On the experience you have using technology from the past, with your knowledge of the, you know, the world, the tech space right now. And that's really all you can do. And that's exactly what MKBHD did. And his review matched everybody else's.
Yeah.
That it sticks.
Yeah, absolutely. I have 3 quick thoughts on this because I think you just touched on something that's really important. So I'll get there in a second. The first thing I actually wanted to say, because you had said that the, you know, he doesn't have any obligation to the company, which is true. And that the review is not for the company, which is also true. I will say though, his review is actually great for Humane because if they care about what people like MKBHD are going to say about their products, they are going to have to make their products better, right? It is actually a good thing for a company to subject itself to criticism. And it does seem likely that there was no one inside of Humane who's like, this isn't ready. So So you put it out into the world and the world is like, this isn't ready and it's not worth $700 plus $24 a month as a monthly subscription. Someone like I had responded to something and the response was like, this is so irresponsible to criticize an experimental product. My response is like, if you're charging $700 and $24 a month, you can't call it experimental. You are asking real people for real money for a thing that they're going to expect to do things. And it just doesn't do those things very well. And so the second thing was, I feel like I should say this because I know that my executive editor listens to our podcast. I've also never been paid for a single product to review. It's a little different because I don't make YouTube videos with the exception of this podcast, but I should say that. I do have companies that will send me things. I mean, I have a surprise, but I mean, I've been given products to review. I use them. I write reviews about them. I send them back. Sometimes I don't write reviews about stuff. I have a couple of things right now that companies are like, would you like to try this out? And I'm like, sure, that sounds interesting. And it turns out it's not a great product. And I'm like, one, it's not necessarily worth my time to write a bad review. Two, it's not a product that matters that much that it requires my particular perspective on it. And so that's fine. Which leads me to the third point. I think it's okay for reviewers. The reason people like MKBHD, the reason people like your videos about different products, the reason people read my articles is they want the opinion behind it. They want that take. They want that perspective because they trust that person's opinion, right? So if you watch one of Joanna Stern's iPhone reviews, it's because you trust her take, because it's relatable and you think, I trust this person. I she's answering the questions that I have. Same thing is true with Marquez. Most videos I watch of Marquez's, I've probably already had a briefing about the product, with the exception of like the EVs, but like all the other things, like I still learn things, right? Yeah. I trust his take on them. I am happy to consume that content, even though it's his opinion, right? And that's fine. That's what a review is. It's giving your opinion about a thing. It is not an objective news story where it's like, this thing was released and here are the proposed specs. It's not that. It's like, what is it really like when it comes in contact with the real world? And so I think that's an important perspective for people to understand. I will just circle back to the beginning. If the argument is this isn't fair to the company, I would argue that the company should take very close note of all of the things that people are saying, and not just Marquez, but David Pierce. I thought David Pierce had a great video and review at The Verge. The only difference is, and The Verge is amazing, like, have huge respect for them. Their video didn't have 18 million people subscribed to it. And so it didn't quite rise to that point where one person is like, hey, and I'll be honest, like the first thought I had is, are you invested in Humane? Like, you seem real upset about this. And actually, Nilay Patel, the editor-in-chief of The Verge, had a very good response on Threads where he said, essentially, it feels like this is less about the product and a lot more about a lot of AI hype bros, I think you might have called them, worried. Go ahead, you can read it. I don't have it in front of me.
He says, quote, sure feels like the Humane review debate is actually the collective anxiety of a bunch of AI founders who are worried their products can't actually do the things they claim, and poisoning the well of reviews is easier than fixing it.
Yep, there you go. So I actually think that says it about as well as anybody. So
for sure. And so three other quick things I'll say about it, and we'll move on. You know, the Humane response to MKBHD's review was actually very, like, friendly. They were like, we appreciate the feedback. Sam Sheffer, who's been one of the biggest, like, advocate, like, ambassadors, he's on the Humane team. Sam Sheffer, like, said, I'm friends with MKBHD. Like, here's a selfie with the two of us together.
Yeah.
I appreciate his feedback. So Humane's response does not even match the backlash that these other randos are having about MKBHD's review. Two, MKBHD said in his follow-up video, offering feedback to a company like this does not kill the company. Bad products kill companies. That's that bottom line. But also, a wise company will take the feedback, and he uses an example of the first Razer smartphone that he reviewed. He actually shows a clip from his old video, the first Razer smartphone. The haptic vibrator in the phone was just garbage. Like, it made the phone sound weird. It sounded like it was broke. And the next time Razer released a phone, the CEO or founder or whatever, at the release, looked at MKBHD and said, you got to try the haptic feedback thing because it's way better.
Yep.
That's the kind of response that a company should have. And almost, you know, Apple, they don't call it out that directly, but like Butterfly Keyboard versus Magic Keyboard. You know, they celebrated the return of the Magic Keyboard and laptops. Last thing too is the Walt Mossberg, he told a quick story of when he did early in his technology career, he was like walking the trade show floor at a conference and some random tech founder or CEO was like, you know, you're killing my stock price because you reviewed my product and your review was bad. And he was like, Walt Mossberg just shouted back, I don't care about your stock price. You know, he's not,
it's not exactly what he said, but right. The point was, that's not why he writes stories. He couldn't possibly care less about a company's stock price. He didn't own stock in any of the tech companies that he covered. Right. And it's a gross misunderstanding of, in MKBHD flat out said, he says, we disagree about what my job is.
Exactly. But I'm also going to link your article in the show notes because I feel like your headline is just as cutting. The AIPIN review reveals its fatal flaw. It's not bad tech. It's just a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, and look, to be clear, I think it's clear from my article. I have not used the Humane AI pin, so I didn't even try to review the tech. That's not the point. The point is they set out to create a product to replace the smartphone without stopping to consider whether or not anyone needs a product to replace their smartphone, because all of the reviews, David Pierce hammered on this, like, I can't even connect it to my Google Calendar, so I can't even say what's my next event. Well, I'm going to have to carry my phone then, right? And the next article I want to write, it won't be the next I actually write, but the next thing I'm thinking about on this is, like, the perfect solution for this already exists. It's a smartwatch, right? It connects to your phone. It has access to all of that computing power, all of that connectivity. you wear it and you wear it in a place that's not weird, right? You don't have to wear it on your face or your chest. It's just in a place where you've been wearing things for hundreds and hundreds of years and gives you access to that. And if Apple would just make Siri better, like, I feel like they could dominate the Humane AI pin category with something that already exists.
Every review of the Humane AI pin has been bad.
Yeah.
So this is MKBHD. Like, if you search for Humane AI pin review, the Verge's review was negative. MKBHD is negative. Mr. Mobile, his review was negative. It was not great. Mr. Right. Who's the Boss, his video has 2.1 million views also. And his title is, I tested the Humane AI pin. It's not good.
Right.
Universally reviewed as not good. Even though I don't even know what this is. The Humane AI pin is so bad. I would think there would be more backlash if somehow MKBHD came out of the gate and said, this thing is great. Like, his review matches the consensus.
Even Joanna Stern was like, I thought it would be really cool, but it's literally not. It's literally that was what she said.
And, you know, if that should also be a signal to you, a consumer or people watching the reviews, okay, maybe there's one outlier who says they like the Humane AI pin, but every reviewer or most of them that I see on YouTube saying it's bad, it's probably a bad product. And guess what? I haven't tried it yet. I imagine it's a bad product. I imagine if and when I ever get one, even though I pre-ordered on day one, if I ever get one, it's probably going to be a bad product. But anyway, So your take about AI gadgets, though, I do want to mention the Rabbit R1, the other AI gadget that is scheduled to come out. They actually have their pickup party next week. And so they're going to be shipping the first R1 Rabbits to people. We're going to probably see reviews of this next week. It's another AI gadget using a large action model, whatever that means. I did not pre-order one of these at first. And then the Rabbit team actually reached out to me earlier this week because I had a video talking about the R1, the Rabbit R1, and the Humane AI pin and how just a better Siri would beat them both. That video actually did pretty good numbers, got a couple hundred thousand views. So they actually reached out because they want to use a clip from my video during the launch party. So if anyone's at this Rabbit R1 launch party, please film whatever launch video, because I want to know in what context they're going to use my video. Because I told them, sure, I don't care. Use a clip from my video.
You're just wanting to be MKBHD getting mentioned on stage at the iPhone or the iPhone event. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. And also, while I was in the email thread with their team, I was like, hey, can you send me a review unit? Because I would love to review.
Of course.
And they said, oh no, we're only sending it to people who have pre-ordered it. Well, I quickly pre-ordered it and I sent them my order number. I said, well, here's my order number. If you want to send it out early, I'd love to review it.
So, I thought they sold out of them. I thought like they had like 20,000 available and they sold them all or something.
Well, they said they're sending the like reviewers who have bought them. They're going to try and expedite those. So again, to be clear, I have now paid for my own Rabbit R1 and I paid for my own Humane AI pin, neither of which I've received. But when you see reviews of them, they are not paid reviews.
This will be interesting because you probably will get your R1 faster.
Probably.
Which is, I think, the take I've heard is that that's like indicative of the difference between the two devices. The R1 is much faster. And here, I even said this in my article, which was simply like that the R1 is actually great because the fatal assumption that Humane had was that people wanted an AI-powered assistant that was separate from their smartphone. Right. And I don't think that that's true. And the good news is we get to have that conversation because the R1 is literally designed to interface not just with your smartphone, but you log into your Uber account, your Spotify account, your whatever account. You can't do any of those things on the AI pin. You can't say, you know, get me an Uber. You just can't do that with the AI pin. You have to have your phone. So the Rabbit R1, though, you can do those types of things. And it has a screen, right? It's like all of the things that are wrong with the Humane AI pin presumably will be better. I still think it's weird that you're essentially paying a monthly fee to have like, actually you're not, but you're paying for a device that's essentially like using machine robotic AI to control an Android phone in the cloud somewhere.
Something like
that. It's virtual Android phone.
Something so super sketchy. Yes.
It's a little weird. I think they got to workshop that a little bit, but at least they're moving in the right direction. Right. So,
on last thing, and then somehow we'll get through the rest of the news today. I wanted to mention this because Nothing, another startup hardware brand, which you can look at MKBHD's reviews of the Nothing phone, and like he offered honest feedback, and Nothing is very good at like taking feedback and then improving on their product. They released new earbuds, which this might not be very interesting, but at the very bottom of this Verge article, they talk about the new earbuds, that they'll become more capable in the months to come, and the company plans to add ChatGPT integration to its smartphones and earbuds. And I found that interesting only because if you're going to have a separate device that can talk to ChatGPT, earbuds seems like a way better piece of hardware than a separate device like a pin or whatever, because A, you're going to use those earbuds anyway to listen to stuff.
Sure.
And if you're going to interact with ChatGPT, there's a microphone in those earbuds. You can do it in the privacy of your own head. And that seems like, an integration that might be worth it, because put the smarts right in the things you're already wearing in your ears. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I don't know that I want my earbuds getting really hot while
that's
they're in
true.
My
no,
ear.
I don't want that.
But they'd still have to have I think that's a better solution than wearing your best Sunday brooch, you know, and talking to it when you're standing in front of the New York Stock Exchange and saying, tell me what you see.
Your corsage.
Yeah.
The humane AI corsage. That's what's going to be all the rage at the next prom.
I'm all for it.
Homeschool dance. All right. We have a bunch of other stuff I want to get to. We're going to, maybe try and do a 20-minute lightning round of all this other stuff.
Plus, we can do it.
Just got Apple Vision Pro. I do want to take 1 second. I want to thank our members who support us directly. Thank you for continuing to support the show. There's increasing numbers every month. And so if you have not, we would appreciate your support. $5 a month, you get an ad-free version. So this part's cut out. But also you get bonus content every week. I think Jason has an update on his appliance story from last week.
Oh my gosh, I forgot. I've lived a lifetime since then, Stephen.
Lived 1,000 lifetimes. This is the Gandalf that comes back. So we're going to hear about Jason's continued appliance saga in the bonus episode today. And we have bonus episodes every week when you do that. So you can support the show directly in Apple Podcasts. You can go to primarytech.fm and support us through Memberful there. And I do want to ask, this is kind of for everyone. But those of you who don't support the show yet, you can answer this question and then go support the show. I would like to find a way to communicate better than social media, because sometimes I know there's lots of listeners out there. Some are on X, some are on Threads. Some of you are emailing us directly. I would love to have a platform where we can all just talk and stuff. Those who listen to the show, and for me and Jason, I'm not crazy about Discord, but maybe Discord's the answer. I don't know. If you would join a Discord server for Primary Technology, let us know. Reach out via Twitter, X, or email us podcast@primarytech.fm. But I would like to start, really fostering a community where we can all talk about stuff, because we have amazing listeners. We got some follow-up from last episode. That's the kind of follow-up that would be great in a community discussion. So anyway, thank you for supporting the show. If you don't support us yet, we love and appreciate your support. $5 a month, $50 a year, or give us a 5-star rating and review an Apple Podcast or Spotify. We appreciate that as well. All right. The first game emulator app is out on the iPhone. Did you try it yet? Delta?
No.
Oh, Jason. Now,
Here's the reason why.
Okay.
Downloading a game emulator is not the end of that sentence. There are 9 things you have to do after that, or else it's not really all that useful, and I'm not doing any of those things.
I quickly discovered that downloading this app and doing nothing else does nothing.
Right.
When you open this app on your phone, all you have is a blank screen with a plus button.
And you have to feed it.
You have to feed it ROMs to play games, but I actually watched a video from Fernando Silva over at 9to5 Mac, and he mentioned this website. So I'll put the blame on him. He told me about this website. So
this is the last episode of our podcast.
If you go to this website, that's all I'm going to show. It's right there. I'll put it in the show notes. I'm not even going to say it live on the air, but you download ROMs from this website, and then you can play games in this emulator. And I just have to say, I downloaded Kirby for the regular Nintendo, and I downloaded Super Smash Bros. For the Nintendo 64. And I literally played it on my phone, and it was kind of magical. I will be honest.
Wow.
I've never been into game emulation. I've never tried this on any of my devices, but doing it on your phone, being able to play these old school games on your device, I think it was fun. And then I showed my son, who has an iPhone 13, and he was like, because he's played something, because my Nintendo 64 is still at my parents' house, and my regular Nintendo is still at my parents' house, playable.
Wow.
These machines are playable. So they've played these old school games on the systems. And so when he was like, whoa, you can play the old school Smash Bros. On your phone? Yes. It is kind of magical. So, yeah.
I was listening to the ATP guys this week talking about this, and the only thing that kept going through my mind, one, this does seem like Apple is simply trying to preempt the alternative app marketplaces, because that seems like it's the most logical reason to have an alternative app marketplaces for apps like this that weren't allowed before. There are other types of apps that I don't think Apple's ready to allow, but this is a big one. But the weird risk here is it says something about retro game, and then like, but it doesn't define what it. So there's a whole lot of, we're just going to have to guess what Apple means by this word. And when you're making something that like Nintendo makes games emulated on the Switch from, like, you can play like 007, right? Like GoldenEye or whatever. Like it's emulated basically. Right. So I don't know. It feels like something that I think should exist. I'm wholeheartedly like on board with that. I just am not sure how long it will survive because, you know, some of the companies that made these games are not going to think that this is as cool as the rest of us do.
And there was a bunch of emulators that tried to get in the App Store and Apple denied or kicked out. So it's curious that this is the one that finally made it through. We'll see if it stays, but it's cool right now. You should try. It's totally free. The ROMs are free if you go to that website.
So. It only costs you 3 to 5 years if you download the ROMs.
Supposedly, if you had to, listen, I only downloaded games.
Is this the VHS rule?
It's the VHS rule, okay. Meaning if you own the game already, if you own the physical thing, you can have the ROM. And I own all those games. I have the Nintendo 64. I could play right over there.
Welcome to primarytechlawyers.fm.
No, we are not. As we have said on numerous occasions, we are not lawyers.
All right.
Not lawyers. But if I was a lawyer, I would immediately sue Boston Dynamics for creating the Terminator. I like that transition. I just had to mention this. Boston Dynamics, who's made the Atlas robots, and if you ever watch their videos, they're both incredible.
Amazing.
And terrifying. They put ChatGPT in their little dog robot. All I'm saying is this was how they announced their newest Atlas robot. You can go to youtube.com/@primarytechshow. I'm showing it right now. The way this thing gets up from the ground in a contortionist, like gymnast fashion, and then has the ability to rotate its head, body, and legs 360 degrees. It has like a
Steven, this is a Sora video, isn't it? This is 100% one of those body horror AI generated videos. I don't believe you.
It is totally body horror, but robot body horror, which is a new genre I didn't know I didn't like. This is a totally new genre.
It's not quite as bad as human body horror, but it is terrifying to think that this could exist.
And it does. This is the new Atlas robot. It has like a Pixar lamp style head. I'm glad they didn't try to put a human face on it. It is absolutely terrifying, but it's also incredible the work that they do at Boston Dynamics. So this is the robot. All I'm saying is, I paused it in this weird contortionist pose. All I'm saying is, don't let ChatGPT get near this thing. Don't let any Gemini. Don't let any AI large language model get near this robot.
Yeah.
Because I feel like once it does, I mean, it's over, right?
The last thing you want is your humanoid robot to hallucinate. Do you remember the whole Kevin Roos from the New York Times with Sydney and Bing? Yeah. Really want this thing to tell you to leave your wife? Come on.
This not good. Not good. And then, just in one other terrifying AI news, Microsoft now announced Vasa 1. It's a lifelike audio-driven talking faces. So what this does is it can take a still image and make it sing and then animate it like a video. So I'll put this link in the show notes. You can also go to our YouTube channel, subscribe to the channel. Well, you can watch it there. These are AI generated videos. Now it's generated off of a still image, but the realism of the singing is pretty wild. They also have one with the Mona Lisa, which is actually horrifying. Yeah. Actually the worst thing I think I've seen today. It's still early, but it's the worst thing I've seen today. And again, do not put this in the Boston Dynamics robot either. Although, if we could actually get full musical performances from the Boston Dynamics robot because of this, I might be in favor of that. You might convince me.
Just one more job that AI is going to kill.
An entire robot AI-powered Hamilton performance would be pretty wild.
The humans do a pretty good job. It's fine.
No one's replacing Lin-Manuel Miranda in this lifetime. We'll just say that. So
I mean, well, that's a hot take that I think will be alone.
Maybe I should step that back. I should walk that back. We'll see. But he's at the top of his game right now. But anyway, so that's a Microsoft Vasa. That's terrifying. We'll put the link in show notes. Also, I wanted to mention this because we had a bonus episode a couple months ago where we talked about physical media, how Best Buy was removing it from the stores. And now Target, they haven't officially announced, but the president of physical media, whoever that is, they apparently...
That's a Twitter account, by the way, not like a position to a Target.
There's not a company called physical media, and this person is the president. He is saying Target sources are telling me that they will stop selling physical media in-store and online by 2025, which is next year. Whether or not this is true, I mean, Best Buy officially announced that they are doing that, physically stopping selling physical media. That's what we talked about in our bonus episode a couple months ago. Now it looks like Target is following suit. I actually just saw a video from Digital Trends, a big YouTube channel, that Amazon might be like deprioritizing physical media, Blu-rays and stuff, if you want to buy it online, which the few times I've wanted to buy a Blu-ray, because I'm going to rip it and like take out the curse words so we can watch with my family, it's been hard to find the Blu-ray sometimes. And so I think we are slowly marching towards the death of physical media, Jason.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm going to have to look into this and talk to Target about this. I mean, when I wrote about Best Buy doing it, like it was one of the most widely read articles I had written in the last like 12 months. People like have lots of feelings about this sort of thing, which is funny because I really just wanted to ask the million or so people, when's the last time you bought a DVD? Do you own a DVD player? Why are you so sad about it? And it's really just, no, but I remember going to do this. Like, right. And that means I can never do that again. So.
But there are people like John Siracusa out there. And if you're like a real home theater enthusiast, you will still get a better visual and audio experience watching a physical disc than streaming it. Because
I think that's debatable.
Oh.
I mean, you said there's people in the world like John. There are very few people in the world like John Siracusa, who I really think is amazing. He's one of the co-hosts of ATP.
Yes.
But he is also very particular about a lot of things that, in a way that most people are not particular about them. And I feel like, I mean, yes, Blu-ray DVDs are going to be a higher quality than streaming something in 4K on Netflix. Is right. it? How much higher? Like we watch things on our you know OLED TV that are in 4K. Right. I don't think having the DVD would make it better. I don't know.
I will just say this. I still have some Blu-rays of like Star Trek, like modern Star Trek movies or whatever. And I do find it looks slightly better, mostly because there's like zero artifacting. Because it's not buffering from the internet. But this could be solved if things like the Apple TV went back old school and let you download the movie.
Yeah.
But like, if you just look at the data, like if you rip a Blu-ray movie, the data, it's like 40 gigabytes, 30 gigabytes. Like that's the movie file size. So that data is like the detail and everything of the movie. Whereas when you download a movie, even from Apple TV that you just bought, it might be 8 gigabytes, 5 gigabytes, maybe at the most 10. So just the sheer amount of data, which I would think equals like detail and quality, the sheer amount of data you're going to get from a Blu-ray is more, and you're not going to have to think about buffering or all that kind of stuff. So is it noticeably more? Like, can your eyeballs actually see it? That I think is debatable. Is it worth it? From my purchasing power, I would say no, because I bought Dune 2 on digital and I'm probably not right. going to buy it on Blu-ray. So whether it's worth it or not, I think is debatable, but I don't know, listeners can tell us.
I do just want to say there is one other way you could solve the problem of buffering and artifacting, and that is you just need faster internet, Steven.
You know what? That's exactly right. I need faster internet. That's always the answer. It always comes back to faster internet.
I'm not going to lie. I waited like 2 minutes to say that because I was like, this is the guy who has the fastest internet I know and he's complaining about artifacting. Come on, dude.
I don't see it. And there is, as with anything, there's that convenience, like quality pendulum, and streaming something, the convenience wins out because it's still close enough. But
all right.
I want to talk about you getting trolled though.
Yeah.
You got trolled. Because you posted a bad take.
I don't know if I got trolled or if I got dragged.
I think it was a little bit dragged. It felt a little bit like the day you were the main character on the internet for your headlines. But it's
awesome. Here's the thing.
Sorry.
It's okay. Sorry.
That got me.
I'm a good sport.
It's awesome. Yeah.
But here's the thing I just want to say that I learned about the internet, because I've been a tech columnist for a while and there are things I learn about the internet that are new every single day. So clearly I should just be on the record saying, yes, Apple does update its first party apps that are not system apps through the App Store. Apparently you can even like update the App Store through the App Store. I learned that's not a thing, but that's what it said in some of the replies. But I don't have Pages and Numbers in GarageBand on my phone, so I just don't ever see that. Sports app was the first time. And all I said was, I don't remember the last time I saw a first-party Apple app with an update in the App Store. I just don't see. Do you see them often? Like, it's not something I see very often. So suddenly that meant that what I was saying is that Apple doesn't do that? I don't know. Like, to be fair, I don't actually think the words I wrote were a bad take. All apparently what I meant was a bad take, but I 100% will own the fact that like, yes, Apple does update its first party Apple apps. Yes. I just don't apparently have Final Cut on my iPhone. That was one of the ones someone suggested, which there is no Final Cut on your iPhone. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
iMovie.
And iMovie. Just to be clear, I was very inarticulate, which is a bad thing for a writer. I was specifically only talking about the iPhone because, yes, like all of those apps update on my Mac on a very regular basis. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I don't pay any attention to it. But it is just very funny to me that this was the thing that people decided like
to hammer you on.
Yes. And I'm just like, I have gotten messages from people like, but I do stand by my take of who is using Pages on their iPhone.
Okay. So first of all,
I should actually be careful because if our 5-star rating ratio starts to go down, this is going to be why, and I apologize.
Don't rate it, but just based on Jason's take, because I'm gonna reply.
What we really need, though, loyal listeners, is I really need all of you to leave us 5-star ratings because who knows where the trolls may go next.
They might go to our reviews. The only bad take I would say is quote tweeting all your hate comments. That's a bad.
I didn't quote tweet them all. I only quote tweeted about half of them.
You quote threaded a few.
I quote threaded the ones that I felt were especially nice.
Yeah.
There was one person who is like literally building a social friend. It's like Build is like the friendly social app, and they came into my mentions to tell me how stupid I was, and I'm like, you seem nice.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that post. I will say, I get it. You don't see it very often. I do have Pages, Numbers, and Keynote on my iPhone.
Oh my gosh, what's wrong with you?
And I will say for several reasons.
Keynote, yes. Keynote was the one mistake I made.
Thank you.
Because it actually is useful because you can actually control Keynote event. But exactly. I don't have to do that very often except for when I go to my kids' journalism class.
Sure. But in the same way, Numbers, I have some budget and project spreadsheets in there. And sometimes if I'm asked a question either by my family or I'm trying to check a number, and I only have my iPhone with me, I will open the Numbers app and look at a spreadsheet. It's the magic of iCloud, Jason. All those docs are everywhere. The Pages one, I understand your argument. I do not open Pages on my iPhone to write anything. Here's the only thing I use Pages on my iPhone for. Sometimes my kids want to print a picture or something. And if you just print from the Photos app or you try to print from like the web, who knows how it's going to be formatted, what size it'll be on the page. You don't have granular control over like zooming and scaling and the print dialogue. So what I do is I open the Pages app on my iPhone, start a new blank document, import the image there. And then I know like this is the 8.5 by 11 that's about to be printed out, and I can size whatever I want, the images or whatever, on the thing on my phone and print it from my phone. And I just find Pages to be the easiest way to do that.
Yeah, because it's I do understand that there are some life and death situations where you have to print something immediately from your phone that you could not wait till you got to your computer do that. That does make sense. But no, I do stand by the idea that like, who's using Pages on the, and the problem with, and this is the mistake I made, that when you ask that question, people will find a way to answer your question.
That's
if you say, who is using Pages on their iPhone? Oh, well, this one time I had to print a photo for my kids. No, like, it's like, oh, I use it all the time to write. I'm like, no. I mean, because honestly, Steven, do you use Pages on your Mac? Really?
On my Mac?
Do you really use Pages on your Mac?
I do. Because I have
like if you had to write something, you're not opening Pages. You're opening Google Docs.
I'm opening Bear.
Okay.
If it's for work, it'll be Google Docs.
Yeah.
But like I write long form in Bear, but I do use Pages for things like I have some invoices that I do regularly that I have in Pages, and so I just duplicate the Pages document, change the numbers, change the dates, send it. You know.
So you want to know like what that. The only thing I use Pages for? The only thing. And listen, Pages is actually a really good app.
It's a good app.
In my opinion, the best page layout app you can get for free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Easily. But you know the only thing I use it for?
What's that?
Is when I take screenshots of apps, if I'm writing about an app, and I take a couple of screenshots on my phone, like of the screen, of the views. You know, when I did the call sheet review recently. And then I just open Pages on my Mac and I dump them on there and I take a screenshot of them laid out. That's it. That's the only thing I use it for, is laying out screenshots.
We should build a shortcut. You could build a shortcut for that. It'll be even faster. Pages also, I did use iBooks Author back in the day to build some interactive books when I worked in the travel industry. That was another app I still wish existed because they brought a lot of those features into Pages, but not all of them. And so Pages is also like for ebook, like you could publish an EPUB, you know, you can export an EPUB file using Pages. And I have done that once or twice, you know, if I was more of a writer, maybe.
But not on your iPhone.
No, but you can export an EPUB from your iPhone. Anyway, let us know. Everyone who has Pages on their iPhone, they're going to write.
And just to be clear, yes, I was proved wrong that yes, Apple's first party apps do update.
They do.
In the App Store outside of point releases.
Not all of them.
No, like and you, I just don't have really very many of those apps that people started like GarageBand Clips. I didn't even know what the Clips app was. I had to look it up because I delete it off of my phone every time.
But
it's
I will,
like, what is this?
The only thing I'll say in your defense, like, there are apps like Shortcuts, which will only get new actions when there's a point update, but you don't
or
see
mail
that
or messages mail, or any messages, of those. They calendar. Only update that way. So
yeah, you don't see the update there. So I get it.
I'll take my trolling. It's fine.
I just want to mention this because we talked about the undersea internet cables a couple episodes ago in the bonus episode. And now The Verge has an incredible story. The reporting is amazing, but also just the animations and web design of this story is amazing. I'm scrolling through it right now just very quickly, but like, it's awesome. And so
their art direction is top notch.
Oh
really
my
good.
Goodness. You know, they did this with, early on when The Verge first launched, they talked about like, I don't know if it was bunkers, like underground bunkers. They talked about something, but anyway, they've had a few stories like this that are just visually amazing and visually from a web page perspective. And you could still tell a great story and do amazing reporting on a website, which is what Neelay Patel says all the time. It's the last website on the internet. And this is a really good story. So if you want to learn more about the ocean cables carrying your internet across the Atlantic and Pacific, you can check that out.
And soon, I'm looking forward to the investigative reporting that they're going to do about people using pages on their iPhone, because clearly somebody was listening to our conversation.
So bitter. You're gonna get more trolls now. You're inviting more trolls. All the trolls are coming out.
Listen, it's fine. People can use pages on their iPhone. I'm just saying it's not the most common use case. Can we at least agree on that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I agree. All with right. that. Yeah, it's not common at all. All right, we got to talk about personal tech because you got an Apple Vision Pro finally.
I did.
Finally. Tell me about it.
Well, I also should clarify, I did not buy an Apple Vision Pro. I just want to be real clear because I know that there are people who are listening to this who'd be like, you seriously bought one of those? And I did not buy one. Apple did send me one to review. They sent me a review unit. It's funny to call it a review unit at this point because it's been what? 6 months, 6 weeks, eight
it's,
weeks?
It's since a long-term it came out? Usage unit.
I mean, but that's great. I am going to like be able to do some more reviewing, especially with some different types of applications and experiences. And that's great. I will say I've used it every single day since I've had it. It came last week. It came actually the day after we recorded. I think they had to time it to my optical insert things because it'd be weird for it to show up and not have those. And anyway, the first thing I will say is the first day I used it, it was terrible. I don't know why, but like I think it's because I was using the
solo band, the wrap around your headband.
Thank you. It was a terrible experience. I did get headaches.
Wow.
Whatever. I changed the band and it completely changed the experience of using it. Okay. So I will just say for all of you YouTubers who are using it and getting headaches, you may not look as cool, but the over the top strap works really well.
The dual loop. Yeah.
I've used it every single day. I think most of what people are saying about it being bad is sort of tainted by the idea that a lot of the people I hear talking about how bad it is, I think have buyer's remorse from spending $3,500 on it. And I don't actually have that problem at this point because I did not spend $3,500.
Right.
And so, because even a lot of the people I know who reviewed it and maybe who got review units from Apple, they still bought one of their own. And so I think that they're sort of like, what did I spend $3,500 on this thing for that I'm going to use it to justify that price? I can just use it. And so I was surprised though. I was really looking forward to, I did the MLS thing, which I agree with everyone was dumb because like you just let me stand on the field for the whole entire warm up or the whatever.
That would be enough. Just to look around, see the team.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I did the whole going to Disney Plus and go to the Scare Floor or the Disney Theater or Tatooine.
Did you do the High Line or the Rhino immersive?
I haven't done those yet. I will.
You got to do
those. I haven't done those yet. Well, we did. I think the High Line was one of the ones we did at WWDC. So I have done some of those things.
You did the Alicia Keys rehearsal room?
Yep. We did that stuff. So, but the immersive environments are great. I like the throne room, the Iron Throne Room in the Max app. Yeah, that's pretty cool. By far the best thing about the Vision Pro are panoramas. Like
those are cool.
It is like emotional.
It is
in a way that I did not expect. The immersive experiences, I totally knew what to expect because I had done that and they're done very well. But I have panoramas dating back to, I was using crappy iPhones because they are not very good photos. Probably 2012. I don't know when they added the panorama feature, so I could be wrong about that. Yeah. But I have them from Christmas morning with our four little kids, a panorama of our living room. I actually have panoramas of our house when we walked through it when we were considering buying it, right? Wow. So it was like standing in that room, what was somebody else's stuff at the time, but it's like, still, wow, I have them of our backyard from many years ago before we did lots of stuff. I have a bunch of them from Alaska when we did a trip two years ago. I am so glad that I took panoramas for the last 10 years, not because I was going to get a Vision Pro someday. In my opinion, they're so much better than spatial video. Like the panoramas are just, they're not as immersive in the sense that they feel 3D. I'm not impressed by 3D. In fact, I spent a lot of time in the Disney Plus app trying to figure out how do I watch Endgame not in 3D? And you have to choose the IMAX version, apparently. Right. Yeah. I'm like, can there just be a setting that says, 3D is terrible. Please don't make me watch anything in 3D. I just want to see the normal movie. Yeah. It's bad.
In the Apple TV app, if a movie has 3D, it asks you 2D or 3D, like right when you press play.
Yeah.
But in the Disney Plus, it's a little annoying.
It thinks everyone wants 3D. And I'm like, nope, I just want to watch a normal version of this movie. Right. Because honestly, like the 3D version, I started watching, I listened to your review of Way of Water. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I got to watch this. And I'm like, nope, not watching this in 3D.
It was weird, right?
I can't make it. I'm not going to make it through this movie. It'd be hard for me to make it through it in 2D, not doing it in 3D. Just not going to happen.
It's apparently 48 frames per second and the 3D in the Disney Plus app. For whatever reason, it felt like a video game cutscene the entire time. That's all I'll say. I reviewed it on Movies on the Side, but I struggled. Like I was traveling, so there was nothing else to do. So I did watch the whole thing. I did not enjoy a minute of it.
So then the other thing that really, I knew that it was going to be cool. We wouldn't normally think this, but I think the most encouraging experience I had, because I'm hoping more people will do this. And to be fair, I stole this from Casey Liss. I think he talked about it on Upgrade when he subbed for Jason Snell, but it's the Gucci app. And I don't know if you've done this yet, but
I downloaded it because I heard him say it.
But. Yeah. And so if you watch, the first thing that happens when you open the Gucci app is it wants to show you this documentary about the new creative director, Sabato Da Silva. I don't know his last name. It doesn't matter. Because I don't know who he is, but I watched the thing and it's like, starts out just as a 2D video. And then all of a sudden the environment becomes immersive because you're like on the street where he had his runway show, and you can like turn around and look and there's the church and there's it. And it's like more companies need to do stuff like this where they're taking advantage of creating content that utilize, it's not a 3D movie. It's not an immersive experience. It is a video that then becomes immersive throughout different parts of it. So yeah.
That's pretty cool. So have you captured spatial video on your iPhone and watched it in Vision Pro and it was not impressive?
Yeah, but I mean, I captured video of spatial audio of me sitting in my office, which is not that impressive because I can just look at my office. It's like, oh yeah, look just like this. So I
would encourage you to maybe, like if one of your kids has a soccer game soon or some sporting event, like to take spatial video of that event and watch
You want me to wear the Vision Pro?
No, do it on your phone. Just do it on your phone. No.
Okay.
Because I did that Christmas morning where I took a spatial video of my kids opening their presents, and that I watched in Vision Pro. And that was, I will agree, the panorama is more like a visceral reaction because it wraps around you and it really feels different. The spatial video is not as much like that because it is relegated to like this window in your view, but it is pretty cool. And it did have like that emotional tinge that you're saying when you capture a spatial video like that. So I would encourage you, you know, just try that, something like that.
Yeah. I did record a spatial video at Christmas this year. And so I watched that and it was like, oh yeah, I could see this being cool.
Yeah.
But then I did then I opened the photos, like went down one toggle into the panoramas. I'm like, oh, what do I have in here? And all of a sudden I'm standing back on the shore in Alaska, like in Seward. And there's just the bay and the mountains. And I'm just like, holy crap. this is like amazing, intense. Yeah.
I will say there's one other app, Zillow. Have you tried the Zillow app?
You're talking about like the Buy a House place?
Yes, the Buy a House app. They actually added immersive experience in their app. And you can go to some, again, it's not all listings, but you can go to some listings. It's like the over $1 million listings, of course.
Yeah.
But you can actually, it puts you in the house and you can look around.
Like anybody, any of the listings that have those immersive walkthroughs or whatever. You can do that in the Vision Pro.
It'll show you which listings are immersive, and then you can do that. And like that seems like a really cool use case. I will say I tried it, and like it was kind of like rendering the whole time, and it never got super sharp. So it's not like a perfect experience, but that seems like a cool use case.
Yeah.
But I will say, I mean, I'm still using it once a week. I did bring it to a Starbucks finally. I finally drummed up the courage. I was at a Starbucks.
That's fantastic.
I was waiting for myself to appear on a TikTok or an Instagram reel. I kept like looking by location, like, did anybody post me? Because there were a bunch of like college students there, and I was like, surely they would post. Apparently, nobody cares. Nobody.
You were in the Washington Post, and you were concerned about getting posted to TikTok in a Starbucks with your Vision Pro.
I was just curious. I was just curious if anybody would do it. No one did it, apparently.
All right.
Dune 2, though, I haven't watched it yet in Apple Vision Pro, but I'm excited to watch that one. And also, but I have to say, Argyle. Did you try watching Argyle at all?
Not yet.
It's not good. It's not a good movie. Bad movie.
Okay.
I was kind of, I was upset by it because I was very excited for it, but I'm glad I didn't pay for it. Not worth paying. Well, do you have any other thoughts on Vision Pro, or you want to use it some more? We can.
I think I will keep using it. I think that it is the two biggest frustrations I have are I want to rearrange the apps, which is weird that I can't, because I don't want to have to like swipe several screens to open the thing I want to open. Also, it's annoying that all your iPad's apps just are in one folder and you forget about that. So I'm using Spark's mail app and I'm just like, where did that go? What do I have to do? Oh, I have to go in and do that. And
I forget about that too, yeah.
And then the notifications thing where it just dings at you, but it doesn't give you any visual notification anywhere that there's, because you're just like, what was that? What happened? Yeah, and then you have to like look up, open the thing, look and it'll show you them. I'm just like, oh, but part of that's because I have most notifications turned off on all my other devices.
Right.
And so I'm just like, what's going on? I will confess, I did install Slack. I opened it once, I closed it and removed it from there. I'm like, nope, never doing that again.
I did the same thing. Like, I doubt, let me try it. And I was like, no, I don't want any of that.
Because here's the thing. If I really needed to do things where I was using Slack, I would use the virtualization of my Mac screen, right? Which is actually really cool. I didn't realize that this was true because this was not an experience that we had when we demoed it at WWDC, that your Mac screen actually goes black. Like the Vision Pro isn't just blacking it out. The Mac screen actually goes black, which makes it ideal if you were using it in a situation where there were people around you didn't want to see your screen, but you weren't worried about seeing you wearing a Vision Pro.
Well,
which is a weird Venn diagram, but that's exactly you find yourself in the middle.
But honestly, like that's exactly what I did at the Starbucks because I was going to use my Mac and I was like, my Mac is just going to be black for everybody around, which is great. If you're on a plane or traveling, you know, that's also a great opportunity because like, you know, someone is going to be right next to you and would be looking at your screen just by the nature of it being something to look at. And so if it can just be blacked out, like it's a pretty cool use case.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to using it some more. I'll have more opinions because I'm, you know, 6 weeks behind the curve on this, but I don't think panoramas are a reason to buy one of these, but I will say that they are indicative to me of like, you know what, there are some experiences that someday like version two of this or whatever, there are definitely experiences that you can have that don't exist anywhere else. And you can do the same kind of thing in an Oculus. It's just, you don't have all that stuff already built into the ecosystem. So yeah.
I do want us to do like that game app sometime where you can play like Battleship across.
I got to set up my persona. I haven't even done that yet.
Oh, set up your persona. Then we should do like a game of checkers or something. It'd be fun.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Before we get to our bonus content, I do want to do one follow-up. Jenna C. emailed us. We talked about photo backups last week and about how Google Photos is a good way to kind of back up all the photos from your device on device. You don't have to do anything else. And she was saying that, or they were saying like Google Backup, it doesn't allow you an easy way to get all your photos out of Google Photos at once. You do have to like request your photos. They email you a bunch of zip files and then the photos are in no particular order. So they actually said Amazon Photos, which is free if you subscribe to Amazon Prime, like even for delivery, is a better option. So that is another option out there if you want photo backup. I knew that was an option. I tend to just not be crazy about Amazon apps UI and stuff. So I don't use it.
Yeah. And I do appreciate Jenna, you sharing that because that's a fair point.
Yeah.
And that is the only pushback I would give is that sort of like saying you're using Backblaze and if your house burns down, you got to wait for someone to mail you a drive. Yes. It's not the most convenient thing, but if you're using it as a backup, right? Like it's like at that point, you're just glad that it exists somewhere.
Sure. So. Sure. But do it somewhere. And so Jenna's saying she has a good experience with Amazon Photos. That's a great option. I actually started doing the Google Photo Sync again. I'd stop for a while because sometimes your phone gets hot, but I'm like, it's probably worth it. You know, my phone's getting hot. My AI pin's going to get hot. My Vision Pro is going to get hot. Everything's going to be hot. So we're heading into summer. Let's just do it. All right. We're going to get to our bonus episode. What'd you
burn
say?
Burn it down. I said, burn it down. Just burn it all down.
Florida. Yeah. So speaking of reviews, I'll just say I needed a pool vacuum. And this is one of the benefits of being a YouTube creator. There was a company reached out. They wanted to send me a pool vacuum. One of the things like crawls along the walls and stuff. I accepted no money. No money exchanged hands. But I'm keeping that pool vacuum. And so I will offer my honest review soon on the pool vacuum.
All right.
Channel. So there you go. But you should subscribe to this YouTube channel, youtube.com/@primarytechshow. We're slowly getting to those 1,000 subscribers, but you can accelerate it if everyone listening to the show right now, we have way more than 1,000 listeners. So if everyone goes subscribe to the YouTube channel, we'll hit 1,000 like tomorrow. So go subscribe. You can go to the YouTube channel. Link is right in the show notes, or just search for Primary Technology and do the 5-star rating and review. And of course, if you don't already, we would appreciate your support monthly or annually. You get the bonus episode we're about to record and an ad-free version of the show. Thanks everyone for listening and watching. We'll see you next week.